Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Discover a healthcare team that's always here for you at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Hello, good morning. How are you? Hope you are well. On the programme today, heatwave Cerberus sweeps across Europe. We'll have reports from across the continent and a new study that puts Ireland at the top of a global list of countries whose cities will get relatively hotter as we pass through 1.5 degrees of warming. An apparent attack on the Russian-built Kerch Bridge to Crimea. Children's allowance top-ups and another 2 weeks parental leave. The government considers what to give away in this year's budget. We're moving on with our beginner's guide to some of the best music stars of all time. Today, Amy Winehouse. And from single-use equipment to uniforms, we'll be taking a closer look at the carbon footprint that the healthcare industry generates in this country. And Dr. David Coleman will be here to answer your parenting queries. Please email us with them todaycb@rte.ie. You can also text us or anything else on the programme on 51551, but please put the parenting queries on todaycb@rte.ie. It's just a little bit easier for us to manage. I want to begin with something else child-related. The latest Child Law Project report reveals how Ireland's legal and child support services are struggling to protect some of the most vulnerable in our society. The 67 individual reports published today describe a shortage of foster and residential places, irregular and sometimes risky placements, gaps in treatment, and breakdowns in education provision. The situation has led a recently retired judge to warn of future legal challenges due to systematic shortcomings. With me now is solicitor Catherine Gent, a lawyer specialising in children's law and human rights, and for some time as well, Catherine. So I'm sure that as shocking as these 67 individual stories are, they're not that untypical as far as you'd be concerned.
No, and good morning, Philip. Unfortunately, not. And I think, as Dr. Corbett indicated, there has actually been a deterioration in recent years. And I think it's really, really important that we ask the question why. One of the most fundamental reasons that I see for that is the implementation across the board, and in particularly in cases where it's not appropriate, of TISLA's model signs of safety for intervention in families. And effectively, the aim of it is to keep families together, to look at the positives rather than the negatives. But the problem is, Philip, that children are coming into care with a greater level of need because they've been at home for longer in traumatic and abusive situations. And that is the question that I think we need to go back to. In fairness to TISLA and in fairness to their senior managers, they've come to court and said that they are very unhappy. It's the last thing that they want, to have children in risky situations, in terms in particular of the special emergency arrangements, which aren't placements, they're arrangements, which are wholly unsatisfactory. And senior management have given evidence in proceedings, and I think in fairness that is a welcome change. There's an opening up now of the culture to say they can't stand over this. They didn't go into social work to stand over this. But I think the missing piece in this is to say why. Why do we have 7-year-olds in residential care? Why do we have 9-year-olds in residential care? Why is there a higher level of need? And it's a complex situation with a range of factors, but I think they really need to go back and look at why are children remaining at home for longer. It's not working.
Well, help me with that one, because what was the evidence base for that policy in the first place?
They want to work with families, which is absolutely admirable, and keep the family together wherever possible. And that is really important. And of course, that should be done. And there are cases when it is appropriate to do that. You get a network of people around the family who, in theory, will report to TISLA if there are difficulties in the family, so TISLA can step in and provide intervention. But I mean, the difficulty is that you're dealing with cases where children have been seriously injured, like seriously injured, and you know, signs of safety was used with, for example, a grandaunt who's a family member expected to go back to Tuzla and report all of these things, is of an age and of health where it is not fair to expect someone to be the primary gatekeeper in that regard. And I think if you look at the very first case reported, I think it's indicative and instructive that referrals first came in that case in 2014. They then refer to a physical altercation between the child and her mother. You know, children don't get involved in physical altercations. If there is physical abuse towards a child, it needs to be called that. Because that is a cultural shift, mm-hmm. and that cultural shift, Philip, is totally at odds with Tuzla's legal obligations under the Constitution. You know, it's not a theoretical thing. There is a constitutional obligation and imperative to say you have to shift your actions, not just your thinking, from the cause of the parents to the effect on the child. That needs to be embedded.
Is it possible, though, Catherine, that there are a greater number of children's lives and indeed families that are being helped by leaving the children with the parents for as long as possible? Or is this just a model that needs to be dropped straight away?
I think it's a model which could be used in suitable cases. But I think the problem is where you have sexual abuse, where you have physical abuse, where you have addiction, where parents are involving their children and perhaps getting their children involved in prostituting to feed the drug habits, that they are clearly not appropriate cases for this. I mean, again, I think if you go back to that case, it was the Gardaí who took a Section 12. And there are problems with Gardaí in terms of investigation, not having resources, where you have huge delays in getting transcripts of children's interviews. And that in turn is delaying childcare proceedings. But you also have situations where, because of the science of safety model and social workers being reluctant to pass information to Gardaí saying it's going to damage our relationship with the parents, where, for example, I was in a case where a senior inspector was threatening to get a warrant to get information from Tuzla. Now, there are other factors in the system as well. And if anyone is thinking of fostering, please, please come forward. There's a massive shortage of foster placements. It can be difficult, but it can be hugely rewarding. And to give a child that chance, that is also part of the reason why you have 7-year-olds and 9-year-olds going into residential care. You have 10-year-olds in these special emergency arrangements. And they are simply warehousing. Tuzla know it's a problem, and I know that it causes those managers real, I think, pain and grief to see children in such dangerous situations. But they are dangerous. And I think Judge Sims, obviously, and Judge Campbell and other people sitting across the country understand this. Another dimension of it is the government increased the number of
before
judges.
Before we go on, let me pick up on that shortage of foster homes, because I assume that that is what leads to examples like case 47 or case 44 in this report, where, just let me give you case 47, the details that there are three children requiring placements. Child B was in a special arrangement which was due to end soon. A new placement had been identified recently, but in another county. And that meant that the child was going to have to move from their current school, where they were doing very well. You have children literally in this report being described being uprooted with 1 or 2 days' notice and moved to the other end of the country, which can only be, in the circumstances that they're already in, hugely traumatic.
It really is, Philip, and that's a really important point. And I mean, where you have really young children going into out of hours, where they could be placed in hotels or placements literally from one end of the country to the other, Donegal to Waterford in one case that I'm aware of, you know, and siblings split up.
Donegal to Waterford, really, I mean, literally one end of the country to the other.
Yeah. And it's hugely traumatic. It's hugely traumatic. And for siblings, you know, you have parentified siblings who, you could have 10, age of 10 or younger, or 12, who are saying, please don't split up my other siblings. It's really important that they're together. The trauma for them, even, of their siblings being split. And it is difficult to get people and, you know, housing and rooms and everything else, and who has space. It's really hard to get places where there are three or four siblings to get them together. But also, sometimes it's not in those siblings' interest because of their different experiences to be placed together. So all of that needs to be looked at. But if we don't have those resources, it is going to get worse. So that's why I think it's a whole, you know, it's a myriad problem with a number of different agencies, different factors, but we need to go back and really look, why is it getting worse? And I think that's part of it.
I interrupted you there where you were about to go on to the recently retired District Court Judge Dermot Sims, who is warning that the state could face significant claims from failures to protect these children. How so, though? Because these are precisely the kind of people who, in their present situation and presumably later on in adult life, have any other number of difficulties to be considering rather than taking a case against the state.
Well, I think it has been done before successfully. I think that, you know, the state has a constitutional obligation to protect and promote the best interests of the child as the paramount consideration. You cannot say a 10-year-old in a special emergency arrangement where they're not being looked after by properly qualified staff or it's not regulated by HICWA. They're in dangerous situations some of the time. And I use that word advisedly and I use it very seriously. And where harm occurs, you know, and we've heard this year already about children in care being exploited, which is always going to be a problem. But where you have that now on a systematic basis and where children, we have more children in that system where it's easier for people who want to use children for nefarious purposes to reach them, then we have to look at that. Mm-hmm. And if a child suffers harm because of that, they would be entitled to go back. So let's just say, you know, those resources are not what we need to be spending our money on. We need to be putting it in to early intervention to keep families together where that's appropriate. But we also need to be putting it into, you know, increasing the fostering allowance, providing better support to foster carers, so that we have an incentive for people to bring a child into their home for love and care. And saying that, you don't want to make it a purely financial thing, but I think that, you know, the majority of foster carers, huge majority of foster carers across the country, you know, provide love and provide care and do it in a very selfless way and are trying to pick up the pieces. And I think just, Philip, sorry, it's really important to say that, you know, the state is one thing, but people, and I have been saying this as long as I've been involved in this, which is a very long time at this stage, most children suffer harm at the hands of their parents. It's a hard thing for people to get their head around, but we need to get our head around that. We need to be realistic about that, and we need to take steps to protect children.
One of the other areas where we've seen that children end up suffering harm is when they face this cliff edge of losing supports as they turn to adulthood. Is that an area that we have seen any improvement in?
I have to say there are certain parts of the country where there are aftercare systems working well. There are very, very dedicated aftercare workers and they make a real difference and they don't, you know, give up on children when they turn 18 and they don't at the first hurdle say, right, that's it, you're not cooperating with the system, we're pulling back. There are other areas of the country where that is very definitely not the case. And the first time a child falters, you know, effectively, you're gone. So, you know, the policy is you have to be in education. Now, in fairness, is a very broad definition given of education. But, you know, and if they don't have aftercare workers, which they don't, if they don't have social workers to really push for plans when they are leaving care, you know, for any child, for us, I know I couldn't have dealt with being left out of home at 18, not only with no supports, but left to deal with my own trauma. And, you know, that's a real problem with the HSE as well. When children leave care, the HSE have a much more laissez-faire attitude in terms of it's up to the child to look for support, to go to their GP. And the reality is there needs to be a greater outreach problem. There needs to be a greater acknowledgement on the part of the HSE that, you know what, this is a different cohort of people. They're trying to deal with their own trauma and it's not good enough that we put all the, you know, emphasis on them. And at times there's a real tension between Tuzla aftercare workers really trying to push that and being met with a brick wall and quite honestly quite a dismissive attitude at times by the HSE, who I have seen trying to get out of service provision rather than saying, do you know what, we have a statutory obligation to these children, this particularly
and it doesn't just end when they
battles.
Turn 18, absolutely. One of the other things that was really upsetting that Maria Corbett, head of the Child Law Project, said is that In the past, it was the case that the parents' problems and needs had been identified perhaps more closely than the needs of the child. But now she's saying that so many children require care due to their own complex needs. Had these just not previously been identified, or are we seeing an increase in children who need that kind of care?
But that I think is, you know, again, we have to look at the factors. In my experience, it is because children are coming in with a higher level of trauma. They have a higher level of need for services. And
because they've been left in inappropriate settings for longer.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, if you look at an adult coming back from this who, you know, was assaulted and abused, no one would expect them to stay in an abusive situation. You know, in fairness, the Minister for Justice is trying to increase the number of refuges to give people an escape from that. So why should children who are more vulnerable be left in that situation? And it traumatises them further. And it means that when they do come in, they have a greater level of need. And that is problematic. You know, for example, in psychological services, we don't have enough. We don't have as broad a base as we should have. The CAM service is just not fit for purpose in certain parts of the country because they don't have staff. It's a psychiatric-led model. So, you know, despite sometimes the efforts of psychology, if the child doesn't fit the psychiatric profile, often they can be dismissed from CAMs. Where a child is at home with an abusive parent, or a parent who's neglectful through no fault of their own, because you do have vulnerable parents as well, some of whom were these children, and they don't bring them to CAMS appointments, the files are closed. So we need to radically rethink. If we're going to have intervention to family, it needs to be intervention. And if we're going to use signs of safety, we need to have wider systems in place with the services that are necessary that go in, and that the onus is not put on vulnerable families and vulnerable children to get themselves to services when we know it's not going to happen and we know it hasn't happened.
Indeed. All right. Catherine Ghent, thank you very much for talking to us this morning. Coming up after the break, we're going to have an update on that rallying crash in Sligo.
Text 51551 today with Clare Byrne on RTE Radio 1.